It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Children dying, babies dying, fathers holding children in their arms that were dead children. There can't be a worse sight, and it shouldn't be allowed. That's a butcher. So I felt we had to do something about it. I have absolutely no doubt we did the right thing.
President Trump yesterday expressing his deep feelings about what happened in Syria. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. The thing about it is, you will recall that during the debates, President Trump expressed that same kind of passion on the issue of partial birth abortion. Remember, he was absolutely intractable. He would not pull back what he said. He said, what they're doing is horrific. It's murder. And it was very impolitic. You know, it's not the kind of thing you're supposed to say during a debate. And I think that we can see that this president really is tender when it comes to life. Now, whether that translates to great public policy, we'll see. But so far, so good, I have to say. The attack in Syria, it seems to be comporting to be something that's having great effect already. It's just amazing to me, just in these past few days, to see things, how things have developed. The Chinese are cutting off trade, not totally, but they've already started. President Xi called President Trump and said that he wants a peaceful resolution for North Korea, which is amazing. You know, I told you yesterday that since I went to Washington in 2001, because I had just come from North Korea, really, I had just been in North Korea like 2 weeks before I got to Washington. That's how I got in touch or got acquainted with Ambassador Bolton, who was at that time really begging the Bush administration to take steps to stop North Korea because they were dangerous then. And he's been talking about it, writing about it ever since. And so finally, President Trump is actually doing something. President Bush wasn't going to do anything. Certainly Barack Obama wasn't doing anything. And for decades, well, over a decade, we have been allowing this madman, or the madman leading, the son, the father, the grandson now who's the one in charge, to do their madness. And now just that attack in Syria was enough to show people that President Donald Trump is serious and it is having a tremendous effect. Well, at the same time that Donald Trump was making that statement, Secretary of State Rich Tillerson was in Moscow talking to the Russians, and this is pretty incredible, too. Let's let Rich Edson from Fox tell the story.
Following hours of discussions in Moscow with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and President Vladimir Putin, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said what was about to become profoundly obvious over the course of a joint press conference.
The current state of U.S.-Russia relations is at a low point. There is a low level of trust between our two countries. The world's two foremost nuclear powers cannot have this kind of relationship.
However, they do, disagreeing on how to resolve violence in Syria and Ukraine. They cannot even agree on fundamental facts, like who is responsible for last week's chemical attack in Syria.
It was directed and executed by Syrian regime forces. And we're quite confident of that.
We are not convinced that's the case.
Lavrov says he wants an independent international investigation. Fox News asked Lavrov what Russia would do if the investigation found Assad responsible. The Russian foreign minister says he refuses to speculate. The disagreements on Syria, Russia's ally, continue. Secretary Tillerson again stressed the Assad regime is coming to an end.
We do think it's important that Assad's departure is done in an orderly way.
In Syria, we are acting at the request of the legitimate government, a country which is the member of the United Nations.
And on Russian interference in the U.S. election?
That is fairly well established in the United States, and I think that has been spoken to on the Hill as well with the Congress, and it is a serious issue. It's one that we know is serious enough to attract additional sanctions.
The state secretary has not threatened with new sanctions and has not threatened us at all. As for allegations that the United States government has irrefutable proof that we interfered with the election campaign, I have to say once again that we have not seen any facts.
The U.S. and Russia did agree on a few items to continue fighting ISIS, also to keep an open dialogue with one another. Lavrov also said that Putin agreed to reestablish a communication line between the two militaries so they can avoid one another in the airspace over Syria.
All right, I'm going to say something very impolitic here. There is a big difference between having a bull of a man like Rex Tillerson negotiate with the Russians, the Chinese, the leaders of the Middle East, than having a, say, Madeleine Albright giggle her way through negotiations, Hillary Clinton, who handed Sergei Lavrov a reset button. You know, I'm not saying that women can't be serious-minded. Certainly Madeleine Albright acted like she was, and Hillary Clinton acts like she was. But I'm telling you, this is my in politic part. I believe that God has called men to be the leaders. I do. Yeah, call me. I just believe scripture that men are the better people for this job. They are the ones that need to go toe-to-toe with the other men of other countries. That doesn't mean women can't have a role. But I have to tell you, there's something refreshing about seeing a man take charge in the way that he should. And this is the order of things, as far as I'm concerned. And so I thought Rex Tillerson comported himself very well, didn't seem to give any ground. And the Russians, you can just see by the body language that they don't know how to respond. They're not used to dealing with a strong America. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. So Sergei Lavrov and Vladimir Putin both just seem to be a little confused. I'll read you, not confused. They don't quite know what to do with this. They've been bullies. Bullies never quite know when somebody really is strong who gets in the mix and tries to get them to, or exposes what they're doing, then they have some reckoning to do. And I think that's what you see Russia, you know, wah, 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 sort of bullying up and trying to respond. But I don't think they're going to carry through. I actually think they're going to cave on this. That's my prediction. We'll see. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know. But there's a report here in the New York Times that I think is interesting. This is a foreign ministry spokesman, Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova. She said, it is not clear, meaning the Americans, what they will do in Syria, and not only there. Nobody understands what they will do in the Middle East because it is a very complicated region. Forgive me for saying such a banal thing. Nobody understands what they will do with Iran, what they will do with Afghanistan. Nobody understands what they will do with North Korea. Well, you know, that's really true. No one really fully understands what Donald Trump will do in any of those or the Trump administration. And I have to say that in this case, it's a good thing. And so they are used to dealing with America, a weak America, easily bullied, getting away with ridiculous things, whether it's the Chinese and trade and spying and stealing our technology or the Russians, if they did, in fact, try to interfere with our elections, spying on us, playing games with us, messing with us, with nobody really in charge and smart enough to say, no, you're not going to do that anymore. And then, of course, the crazy man, Kim Jong-un, in Russia and North Korea, blustering on and on about how he's going to attack us with nuclear weapons. And I know he will if he can. And so now, you know, wait a minute. You mean it's possible? According to one outlet yesterday, the Americans are now doing these drills with the South Koreans. And the article I read, you know, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but they certainly mentioned the fact that they think the Navy SEALs are training to take Kim Jong-un out like they did Osama bin Laden. And so now I'm hearing that Kim Jong-un is in hiding. So it is amazing. One strike limited in Syria is having this effect. And so I have no criticism of the president on that now. After I've had these days to think about it, I do think it really was a very good thing And so let's be grateful. So much to tell you. Speaking of Russia, of course, and some interference, alleged interference with our elections. Now we know that the FBI actually did get a FISA request to investigate Carter Page, who was loosely, not in an official way, but an advisor, an unofficial advisor to the Trump campaign. So Carter Page was on with Catherine Herridge yesterday, and she had an interaction with him, and I thought you should hear. First of all, could I just remind you that the intelligence officials claimed there was no FISA request, but indeed there was a FISA request, and that this was a Trump campaign person. Even though he wasn't central to the campaign, he was involved with the Trump campaign early on. That didn't last long, but he was. So this is what Catherine, her conversation with Carter Page sounded like. Let's listen.
I have nothing that I want to hide. And the more that the truth comes out, the better.
Former Trump campaign advisor Carter Page responded to allegations first reported by The Washington Post, later confirmed by Fox, that he was the subject of U.S. government surveillance last summer as part of the FBI Russia probe.
To get a surveillance warrant, the FBI has to have solid evidence. So how do you explain it?
Well, we shall see. Again, there was a tremendous amount of false evidence.
And Page blamed the so-called Trump dossier, compiled by Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer.
There was various reporting about where that false evidence may have come from, such as the dodgy dossier.
But in a recent speech, the FBI Director James Comey said it's a high legal bar to monitor an American citizen.
Those applications are often as thick as my wrist or thicker. It is a huge pain in the neck to get permission to bug somebody in the United States, and that's the way it should be.
The Senate Intelligence Committee senior Democrat is fully briefed on the Russia probe.
I can't comment on the FISA warrant, but if a FISA warrant has been issued, it is a very, very, very serious matter.
In 2013, the FBI investigated efforts by Russian President Vladimir Putin's government to recruit Americans. Page's name surfaced in the probe, identified as male-1.
According to these court documents, the allegation is that you passed energy documents to a Russian intelligence operative. Is that what happened?
It was the same energy, quote-unquote, energy documents that I gave to my students at NYU.
Did the Russians try to recruit you?
I was never asked by anyone to do anything untoward or otherwise.
All right, so that was Carter Page. And here, the thing of it is, let me say this again. Do you, hopefully, you realize, and let me just tell you if you don't, everyone was trying to do business in Russia. Since the Soviet Union broke up in 1990, everyone was trying to do business in Russia. They had ties. There were consultants. A lot of Americans, this is not in itself, that Russia sort of joined the community of nations and was partnering with us on things. And that didn't mean they didn't have lots of corruption, but there's no shame, really, just in itself, of having to deal with Russians. You know, I actually had a member of the KGB in my home. I was thinking about this. I was at Radio Moscow, did lots of interviews. I was there for 2 weeks. And then when one of the KGB agents, of course, this is post-Soviet Union, so he's not KGB anymore, came to the United States, I actually had him in my home for dinner. I had a whole bunch of people that had known him. So connections with Russians don't, you know, mean you are a spy. And so it's kind of easy in this climate to go back and say, what was Carter Page doing dealing with the Russians? Everyone was dealing with the Russians. And remember that James Comey was using that ridiculous dossier, which claimed that Donald Trump was sleeping with prostitutes to desecrate the bedroom of Barack Obama and Michelle. Ridiculous dossier. It was totally discredited. And it looks like James Comey used that incredibly flimsy, unsubstantiated ridiculousness to ask for a FISA warrant to Carter Page. That's my understanding. But the bottom line is they were surveilling members of the Trump campaign, and that's, of course, not the end of it. We're going to hear more about it. All right, coming up next, a full discussion of North Korea from someone who knows more than anyone in this country about North Korea. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby, a little girl named Anya. and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans, and they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
CRE recently secured a victory for a Christian ministry. For years, Souls Ministry has organized a free public festival in Las Cruces, New Mexico, geared toward showing children God's love and grace. But when the ministry declined to provide a vendor booth to an organization taking a non-biblical stance, the city abruptly canceled the 2016 festival. CRE sent a letter to the city explaining that the First Amendment protects Soul Ministry's right to control the message it sends the community through vendors with which it affiliates. Thankfully, the city acknowledged its error and promised not to interfere with Soul Ministry's message in the future. Rights have been restored.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A gay student group at Duquesne University fears a proposed Chick-fil-A outpost could cause microaggressions and jeopardize the school's safe spaces. The campus chapter of Lambda says the popular chicken restaurant has a questionable history on civil rights and human rights, which is just categorically false. But these days, truth is relative. For the record, Chick-fil-A does not discriminate against anyone. It's a family-owned and operated business flavored by their Christian values. But those values seem to ruffle the fragile feathers of the university's LGBTQIA community. The same kind of values that flavor the education students get at Duquesne University, which happens to be a Catholic school. So I say open up the restaurant. Any student who might be triggered by the presence of a Chick-fil-A cow should probably make an appointment with a professional counselor. Eat more chicken, snowflakes. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Another show of force on the Korean Peninsula. Nearly 4,000 U.S. and South Korean troops, plus a lot of trucks and ships, staging a mock amphibious landing of a lot of cargo at a South Korean coastal town. Logistical backup, we're told, that would be crucial in the event of any full-scale war with North Korea.
These combined capabilities are essential for our alliance to ensure stability and for the security of the Republic of Korea.
This and other U.S.-South Korea military exercises drive North Korea up the wall, calling them a rehearsal for invasion. The North had equally tough words for the deployment of the USS Carl Vinson carrier strike group to the region. Officials there calling the move reckless, saying Pyongyang was ready for war.
We will hold the U.S. wholly accountable for the catastrophic consequences to be entailed by these outrageous actions.
It is a big week in Pyongyang, and Saturday is the anniversary of the birth date of the country's founder, Kim Il-sung. Along with a massive rollout in the capital city of the latest in the regime's military might, experts say the country might also launch another banned ballistic missile or test an even larger nuclear device. Neighbor South Korea is on alert.
The army should heighten their security alert towards North Korea based on the strong military alliance between the U.S. and South Korea.
Officials here in South Korea have also been trying to tamp down talk in recent days about a preemptive military strike against North Korea by the United States. They know better than most the devastating effect of an all-out war on the Korean Peninsula. Brett.
Yes, I'm here. That's Greg Palcott from Fox. You know, it was occurring to me as he was talking that for the sake of instruction here, perhaps it should be said that when Greg says that South Korea is a neighbor, I mean, they're more than a neighbor. They are, the Koreans are one people. And they're only divided because there was a war when the Northern Chinese Communist invaded the Korean Peninsula and America came in to try to stop the communist invasion. And of course, as have been the case of American wars now, as long as I can remember, except with the exception of the World War II, I guess, all the wars past World War II, the politicians get involved. The military leaders were doing well, making their way up the peninsula. And then the political leaders got involved and we ended up caving. And so the country of Korea got divided. It's separated by a demilitarized zone. And so they are more than neighbors. They are family, and they're separated by just a few miles of a very highly barricaded, guarded fence. It is really one of the tragedies of the 20th century, I think. Well, I know something about North Korea, and I've told you about it in the last few days, but no one really knows more about North Korea or really has done more for them as an American citizen than my next guest, Suzanne Schulte. Is considered one of the world's leading activists on North Korea human rights. She's worked for over 20 years to promote freedom, human rights, and dignity for the North Korean people. She began a program in 1996 to host the first North Korean defectors in the U.S. to speak out on the atrocities being committed against the people, including political prison camps and the horrific treatment of refugees. She's led international efforts to pressure China to end their horrific repatriation policy. She's been involved in the rescue of hundreds of North Koreans escaping. She serves as president of the Defense Forum Foundation, chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition, vice chairman, committee for the human rights in North Korea, and the honorary chairman of Free North Korea Radio. And I want to say a few more things. She is the recipient of the 2008 Seoul Peace Prize laureate. She's also winner of the 213 Order of Diplomatic Service Merit Sungging Medal for the Republic of Korea. She was made an honorary citizen of Seoul in 2008. And I could go on, but I just wanted you to understand that Suzanne really, really loves Korea and has spent a great amount of her life trying to intercede for the people there. Suzanne, thanks for joining me this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Sandy. It's great to be with you this morning.
Suzanne, I know, without even repeating that, you have single-handedly brought the plight of the North Korean people, I think, to government in Washington there, and you've been very successful. Although I think, you know, stories of out of North Korea have become, up until the last few days, you know, we haven't been hearing too much in terms of the news. So in the last decade, and certainly under the leadership of the grandson, Kim Jong-un, how would you describe the changes? Is it business as usual? Is it worse than it was? How would you describe it?
Well, I would tell you that the people of North Korea, big emphasis on the people of North Korea, have transformed that country. Basically, Kim Jong-un's North Korea is not the North Korea of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il because of the incredible changes that have happened that have been driven by the North Korean people's sure self-determination to survive. One of those is information. And radio, we do a radio broadcast every day into North Korea. It's Free North Korea Radio. It's a partnership between North Korean defectors who produce the programs, and Americans and Korean-American churches that pay for the shortwave transmission. But the flow of information in North Korea has had a tremendous impact on the knowledge of the people there. They're watching Western films. They're watching South Korean soap operas. They're listening to our radio broadcasts. But another thing that's happened there since the famine, since the Kim Jong-il dictatorship, when 3 million people died of starvation, that is, in order to survive, the North Korean people started to trade among themselves, and they established markets all over the country that basically show that capitalism is thriving in North Korea, and that's why people are surviving, because they used to depend on the public distribution system, which is where the material goods and the food was all distributed from the regime. But now they're surviving through the markets, and that's an incredible development inside the country. But I think the third most important thing is the eyewitnesses. And Sandy, you know well, because you were involved with the foundation of the North Korea Freedom Coalition, and we were fighting this battle, as you well remember, because you were helping lead it, to get people to understand the tragedy, the human rights situation in North Korea. People really weren't paying attention. They didn't believe that these horrible political prison camps existed, where even children were incarcerated. Finally, people believe us now. And it's taken over 20 years. But part of the reason for that is that there's been over 30,000 people that have escaped. And they cannot ignore that evidence any longer.
You know what? It's just like, Suzanne, because I cover so many things and my life has changed, I don't stay up with North Korea. So to hear you say this stuff is like, it just makes my heart beat fast, I have to say. And let's go back to the radios. You know, I remember when we were talking about trying to get radios in there and dropping them. And yeah. That was part of the North Korea Freedom Act, as I recall. And I had no idea. I had no idea what had happened since then. And so now, isn't this something? You know, when I was there on September 11th of 2001, September 11th, and we were there for 2 days, and I'm sure you remember that, Suzanne.
You were there when 9/11 happened.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yes, and the point of mentioning that again is that we were totally cut off. We knew nothing. We didn't know anything for 24 hours until we came back across the border into northern Manchuria. That's when we heard about the attack. Everyone was so cut off from any kind of information. So now that's not the case, you're saying.
Right. And I'm going to give you an incredible example. You know, we organize the North Korea Freedom Week every April. It's coming up the end of April. And we have a special presentation we're going to do for Congressman Ed Royce and Congressman Chris Smith. We have smuggled out, this has been smuggled out of North Korea, portraits that were embroidered by two brothers of those congressmen, because they've been participating in our Solel message program, where we send in greetings to North Korea. And basically on Free North Korea Radio, we try to help them with American programming from America, to help them with their mission to try to educate the people in North Korea that America is not their enemy. America actually cares deeply for them. So we've been doing these messages for members of Congress. And Royce and Smith have been doing it for several years now. Well, we got a message out. Two brothers wrote, "Please give these portraits to the American politicians. My brother and I spent 3 months making them late into the dark. Please tell them that people have hope, even if they're living in the darkness, because of the U.S. And this is people in Pyongyang. And if they had been caught making these portraits, they would have certainly been sent into a political prison camp or outright executed. So getting information in there is so key. And the people that are really doing that are the defectors themselves that have escaped, because we have the programs that the U.S. used to do and South Korea used to do got stopped during the Sunshine Policy, back when the leftist governments were in control. And the defectors took up that work, sending in balloons with leaflets and information, which is something the American government used to do, doing the radio broadcast, which is something the South Korean government used to do. And it's really critical right now because of the tensions that are rising. And for the people of North Korea to know that our concerns are for them, and that we really care for them. And that's a very important message to send, because the people that are in power there now, the elites, they have to wake up every morning wondering if that's going to be their last day on Earth. Because if they show, you know, we've seen these horrible stories of Kim Jong-un killing his uncle, you know, assassinating people that have been loyal to that dictatorship for their entire lives, just taking them out and killing them and their families. We saw him send an assassin to kill his half-brother. Those kinds of things, if you're in that regime, you've got to wonder the choice that you have, and that's simple. You either stay loyal to this regime or you die. We have to give them a very clear picture that, no, you don't. You can be part of the transformation. And I would love to see what happened in Egypt and Romania happen in North Korea. and that is that the military, which really represents the people, because every North Korean has to serve 10 years in the military, to make that change, to make that judgment, that we don't want to follow this dictator any longer, especially right now when the tensions are so high on the peninsula.
You know, Suzanne, I remember so well being in northern Manchuria, not North Korea yet, and we were interviewing through an interpreter some of the Chinese, you know, in northern Manchuria would at that time were, I guess they still are, hiding refugees from across the Tumon River in their homes, and they can't even go outside in the day. It's a whole different, some were hiding in caves. We happened to be in this home, and it was a woman who had taken in four little boys who had swum across the Tumon River. And through the interpreter, they came to get food because they were starving. And through the interpreter, one of the little boys said, the Americans are sinking the ships that are bringing in our rice. That's why we're starving. And the point is that the propaganda to the population to hate America was
right.
Just unbelievable. I remember we saw, you know how they do the precision drills. And you know how they dress their little children up and put makeup on them, and they do incredible things with precision. We saw one of those performances, and we were able to go up with the kids and have photographs made. And you know, I tried to put my arms around or on the shoulders of this little girl who was so beautiful, all dressed up, and she pulled away from me It was just amazing. My point is that they had built up such a hatred for us,
yes.
And an aversion. And so the radios and the defectors are neutralizing that in ways I never thought possible. That's just an amazing story.
Yeah, we actually have a program called Coming to America, where we interview North Koreans who have resettled here or have visited the country. And just say, why did you leave North Korea? Where were you from in North Korea? You know, tell us about yourself. And then we ask them, what are your impressions of America? And we broadcast that in. And the staff of Free North Korea Radio said it's like a tonic for them because it's their own people giving the truth about what our country's really like. And it's just incredible stories. This one woman wrote about, when I arrived in America, I arrived in New York City, and a man offered to carry my bag, and I was like, what does he want? Because she was very suspicious, and she said, why is this man trying to help me? And an American that was there said to her, oh, because his mother raised him to respect women. That's how men are raised in America. And she was shocked because she didn't understand the concept of respect for women. And she said, now that I've lived in the United States, I understand what that means. And of course, they don't even know what the term human rights are. They don't understand that. So it's really important to do these kinds of programs to educate. And but you're absolutely right about the propaganda. And you know, it starts at childhood. They teach their children math with equations. Let me just give you one equation. If you threw a grenade and killed one American GI, and your friend threw a grenade and killed three American GIs, how many American GIs would you and your friend have killed? That's how they teach their children from the very beginning to hate Americans and be afraid of Americans. So you're absolutely right, and it's just amazing. But once you start to break down the truth with information, it's amazing what can be accomplished, and this the knowledge, because it spreads by word of mouth as well. And when you have so many people who have escaped that are communicating with family members, that's another really important source of information, because they can't call into North Korea, but what they'll do is they'll hire a broker in China and set up a cell phone link where they'll call in to their families in North Korea. Another powerful source of information from the outside world to the people there.
Suzanne, we have to take a break, but when we come back, let's turn our attention to what's going on in the news. And I would love to know your take about what you think Kim Jong-un will do, what you think China will do, what you think South Korea will do. It's just fascinating, and of course it will affect all of us, the outcome of this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Remember this public service announcement? This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Well, pornography is finally being seen for the strong drug and destroyer that it is. When looking at the brain scan of a normal brain compared to brain scans of heroin and pornography users, the porn-addicted brain has the greatest deterioration in brain activity. Recognizing that pornography can impact brain development, increase risky sexual behavior, and lead to sexual addiction, the states of Utah, Virginia, and South Dakota have voted overwhelmingly to declare pornography a public health crisis. Regular use rewires the brain, and the chains of pornography addiction are forged strong, but there is one who saves and heals. He can break the chains of any addiction and free from any bondage. He is the only begotten Son of God. His name is Jesus. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know Him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
American Family Association invites you to Fusion, a Heart Cry for Revival conference. It's a trying time for our nation, and we urge Christian leaders to join us as we seek Christ together. We'll learn, pray, and strategize for action. Join us April 23rd through the 27th at the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Suddenly, the world has focused more attention on chemical weapons than at any time in the 2 decades since they were supposedly globally banned. In fact, only law-abiding nations like the United States have liquidated their stockpiles pursuant to the terms of the Chemical Weapons Convention. Their actual or potential enemies have not. Obviously, Syria still has chemical weapons. We must assume that's true as well of North Korea, Iran, Russia, and China, among others. The fatal conceit behind the Chemical Weapons Convention was not merely that every nation would comply with its terms. Worse yet, President Clinton and senators who voted for it deluded themselves into believing that despite past experience, we would not need the capability to retaliate decisively with chemical weapons to deter our foes from employing them. They were wrong then, and their folly should be urgently revisited. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I really think that China is going to try very hard and has already started. A lot of the coal boats have already been turned back. You saw that yesterday and today. They've been turned back. The vast amount of coal that comes out of North Korea going to China, they've turned back the boats. That's a big step, and they have many other steps that I know about. So we'll see what happens. It may be effective, it may not be effective. It's not effective. We will be effective, I can promise you that.
All right, that was President Trump sending another warning shot. If China doesn't help us, and it looks like they're going to, but if they don't, we're going to do it ourselves. And I told you there was a report yesterday that the Navy, you know, whether this is true or not, I don't know, that with the training exercises with South Korea, that the Navy SEALs were actually doing exercises to take Kim Jong-un out. And then I heard this morning that he's in hiding. So it's all very interesting. Suzanne Schulte, really the definitive expert on the continent, at least the half of the little island of North Korea, who has spent her life really interceding for the North Korean people and is really seeing some fruit from that. But now we're at a sort of a critical juncture. April 15th, this weekend, is the birthday of the dad, the grandpa, who's dead, but he's the one whose picture's everywhere, that everyone has to wear a pin. It's Kim Il-sung, and they're calling it the Day of the Sun. He's like their god. And when the kids sing, every song they sing is a praise song to Kim Il-sung. It is as though he is God. It's like the big pictures of him everywhere in the country. It's a cult. It's a communist dictatorship where they always surround themselves by personality. I described to you yesterday about how Kim Il-sung had pictures of himself posed like Jesus in those famous portraits that are in the old Protestant Bibles. Jesus, the blonde, blue-eyed Jesus with the children, feeding the 5,000. Kim Il-sung had pictures of himself rendered in those poses as though he were God himself. And so that kind of gives you an idea of North Korea, but we are hurtling toward this date. Suzanne Schulte is my guest. Suzanne, as you look at it, knowing what you know, do you think that Kim Jong-un would unleash a nuclear attack on the United States?
No, but let me tell you what we really need to worry about, and I'll tell you why. Just that whole thing about the cult of personality, this is a dictator who wants to stay in power. He is going to provoke, he is going to threaten, he's going to push all our buttons, but he wants to stay in power. He's not going to do anything that's going to go over the line and give us a justification for taking him out. But believe me, I would love it if he would do that, because I love the sound of what you said, taking Kim Jong-un out, especially with the Navy SEAL team. But what he will do is he will push as far as he can, but he won't provoke enough that would justify us attacking. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't knock a missile out on April 15th when it's Kim Il-sung's birthday. There may be a provocation where they launch another missile and then we have to destroy it. But I don't think they would launch something that would be a threat to American troops or to South Korea directly because of that. But this is what we really need to fear. While Kim Jong-un is focused on staying in power and justifying his nuclear program, claiming that he needs that because of the United States, what we need to be afraid of is where he is proliferating this technology. And think about this for a moment. Syria in chaos, right? Syria almost had a nuclear missile. They had the whole development problem. They were developing nuclear missiles. And remember that Israel took out the site. Imagine if Israel hadn't done that. That site was just like the site in North Korea. The North Korean technicians were helping Syria develop a nuclear program. So what we need to be afraid of and really be vigorous is stopping the proliferation of these weapons of mass destruction, because the people that are our enemies don't have the same compunction of Kim Jong-un. If ISIS got hold of some of the chemical weapons that North Korea has been developing and testing on its own people to develop, imagine, what that would, the impact that could have if it ended up being used against us. That's what we really need to be afraid of. And that's why the sanctions bill that was passed by the Congress, Republicans and Democrats coming together, which was great, is so important to try to stop the flow of money that's helping them develop these programs. So I think that's my prediction, is something will happen on April 15th, and we may take out a missile if they do another test firing. But I don't think they'll provoke enough that would justify us taking him out. So we need to be vigilant in getting information in, working with the North Korean defectors to get to get information into North Korea, to reach out to the people there. And that's one of the focuses of North Korea Freedom Week coming up the end of this month, end of April. The focus is regime collapse and preparing for peaceful unification. That's
wow.
The theme.
And it could happen. It could actually happen. I was just saying before you joined me, Suzanne, that since I can remember, Ambassador John Bolton back in 2001 was just begging the Bush administration to do something about North Korea. And no one, you know, has done anything. The Bush administration didn't want to do it because they'd taken on, you know, they invaded Iraq and were tired of war. And so, or at least tired of invading. And so then the Obama administration, you know, for whatever their reasons were, did nothing. And it's just made it worse. But now, actually, you know, Suzanne, it might be possible to stop this guy.
Right.
The player in this that's not been mentioned very much that I think should be, China could strangle out North Korea and stop, you know, economically put the skids to North Korea. But also, South Korea doesn't have clean hands in terms of doing what they could do to stop this guy. Do you agree with that, Suzanne?
Totally, because they have. I always make this point. The South Korean government and the American government spend so much money talking about the human rights tragedy in North Korea and very little to try to end it. And what I mean by that is they don't invest in the organizations that are doing the hard work of getting information in and out of North Korea, and that's the defectors. They get no support from the government, from either government. Our radio show, Free North Korea Radio, is on the air because of Americans and Korean-American churches. We get no government money, and we are the most popular single program broadcasting into North Korea. We are the most targeted for jamming by the regime. And if you remember that tragic incident that happened at the DMZ back in September 2015 when the two soldiers were maimed because the North Koreans planted landmines at the DMZ, that was the last time there was a huge escalation in tensions back then. And the South Koreans, President Park was president then, the South Koreans made the decision to turn the loudspeakers back on at the DMZ, which they had been silent during the Sunshine policy. Well, for 3 days they played K-pop music, which is a very popular music from South Korean culture. It reminds me kind of like the pop bands that we've had, but it's called K-pop. It's very popular in South Korea, very popular in China, and they played regular news programs. But on the fourth day, on those loudspeakers, they lifted the programs from Free North Korea Radio, produced by North Korean defectors. The North Koreans immediately demanded to go back to the negotiating table. And in September 2015, during those negotiations, the North Koreans did not ask for the end of U.S. South Korean military exercises, which they always ask for. They didn't ask for a peace treaty, which they always ask for. They only asked for one thing: turn off the loudspeakers. We are absolutely certain that is because they were playing Free North Korea Radio's programs on those loudspeakers, and they could not afford to have their troops at the DMZ hear their brothers and sisters telling them the truth on the radio program. And that's a powerful indication of how critical it is to give voice to the people that live in freedom, to reach out to those of their brothers and sisters that still are living in enslavement.
Suzanne, I should say, if people haven't figured it out already, you are certainly fully immersed in the political ramifications of North Korea. You work with diplomatic sources. You're highly respected in D.C. But the other part that I want our audience to know is that you're also a committed Christian. And so I have to ask you, when I was in Northern Manchuria, of course, we were there looking at the work of Christians taking great risk to help North Korean refugees. And we were examining what was happening on the Tumon River and the punishments, of course, that were meted out to Christians were just horrendous. They were the special center of a particular ire and punishment in North Korea. Is that still the case?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They just murdered a Chinese pastor last year, and they just abducted a South Korean elder from a church. And they just arrested an American in February. Fortunately, he got released. But what did they all have in common? They were all focused on trying to help the people of North Korea, and they were all believers. It's the believers that are really involved with the Underground Railroad and rescuing refugees that are escaping. And it's the believers that are helping us with the radio station. And as a matter of fact, we're about to double the broadcast for Easter because we want to bless the people of North Korea. This is a news program, so we're going to be reporting the greatest news ever reported in human history, that Jesus is alive and their dictator happens to be dead. But anyway, we're getting ready to record that and broadcast it in for Easter. But this is my Christian faith is what's really motivating me to keep in this fight. It's been very hard. We're fighting against a very dark place. And as you pointed out, this regime is a perversion of our Christian faith. I believe this. Kim Il-sung, as a child, he was raised a Christian. I believe that when that country was under Japanese colonization and they were being persecuted by the Japanese, that Kim Il-sung saw the strength of the Christian faith. Because while the percentage of Christians in Korea at the time was very small, 50% of the signers of the Korean Declaration of Independence were believers. So I think that he saw that it's the Christians that were standing up against the Japanese. It was the Christians that were preserving Korean culture. And he saw the power of that witness. And I believe that he took that and perverted it, turning himself into a god. And as you pointed out, Kim Jong-il at his side was the Christ figure. And then this Juche ideology was like the Holy Spirit. And that people have to say their prayers to this dictatorship. They say the Apostles' Creed that's basically twisted and turned to worship the dictator. They have these worship centers all over the country. It's just, that's why we see so much evil that's happening there.
Suzanne, I wasn't expecting to do this, but let's do it. If people want to help you with this, with the radio, what do you call it?
Free North Korea Radio.
Free North Korea Radio. How could they do that? Is it possible?
Well, defenseforumfoundation.org is our website, defenseforumfoundation.org. And if you go there and if you look for Christian programming in North Korea, you'll find the information on what we're doing. And I have to tell you, Sandy, I was just in Illinois on Sunday morning for Palm Sunday. I went to visit a Korean church, the Korean Church of Bloomington Normal. And since 2013, that church, which is very small, I think they have less than 40 people, they have been contributing $50 a month since that time to keep Free North Korea Radio on the air and to help us with our gospel program. So I went to visit the church to thank them for their faithfulness in helping us all these years. And I got to tell you, one quick story. This isn't so much related to North Korea as it is to the United States of America, but I ran into a woman who I'd met before. She's about, I don't know, maybe 5 feet tall. One of those people that is like in touch with God, you know the kind of people that you know, they're praying all the time. They're prayer warriors, and she's the kind of person that gets wakened up in the middle of the night, and God says, you need to pray for this.
Yes.
She has visions, and she's just an amazing woman. She came up to me, and she said, God told me to pray for you, because I gave a presentation that they're kind of, not a sermon, but just a thankful message to the church. She said, God told me to pray for you. And then she related to me that sometime last summer, God woke
seconds.
Her up in the middle of the night and told her to pray for Donald Trump. She had this vision that Trump was going to be elected president of the United States.
Oh, man.
And that was like in the summer before the election.
Oh, man. Isn't it something to be on the front lines to see what God is doing? It is just, there's nothing like it. Who wants to live safe, you know, really? Suzanne, and you have not lived safe, and you've done so many wonderful things. And by the way, we're going to find that link and put it on our Facebook page so people can give and help you with this Free North Korea Radio. That would be a practical thing to come from this. But I hope we can talk again soon. Please stay safe and just God give you strength and energy and your wonderful personality to continue this work.
Well, thank you, Sandy, for inspiring us back when we founded the North Korea Freedom Coalition. You were one of the founders and our first chairman.
That was a great, great memory, great honor, great privilege. Thanks, Suzanne Strolte. All right, have a blessed Easter, you all. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.